Welcome to Fantastic Females, our adventure to finding the mythical island of freedom together. I'm Kalyani.
And I'm Rupali. We are your next door finance experts sharing our experiences in the world of money and energetics. Hi everyone, welcome back. Today we are talking about a really, really interesting topic. We are talking about money in relationships. The importance of money in relationships, how to think about it, what our thoughts are on this topic, and what you can take away from this.
There's so much that we can talk about when it comes to a broad topic like relationships and money. But since we are edging towards Valentine's Day, maybe we can reference to romantic relationships more so and share some experiences for you to reflect on.
I think the most relevant, or one of the relevant topics amongst this, within this whole umbrella of money and relationships, is choosing a partner. Where we were when we chose our partners at what, like 18, 19, and where we are now. What do you think on that?
I don't think it was a concern. It was even a point to consider. And I find, I've never doubted my choice, luckily. And it's been a very happy kind of choice for me. But I know some people who haven't felt the same way. And I also know some friends who chose or met their partners much later. I met my husband when I was 18, super young. But I know people, obviously, who met at 28, 30. And the way they thought about everything was so much more practical. Like, it wasn't very emotionally driven as I think it was for me. And I think I've also mentioned this a lot of times to people asking me about arranged marriages in India, especially if it's someone not from India, about, you know, like how people decide and how can it even be, how can you just go meet someone? And I was saying that back in the day, the considerations used to be more family, more knowing each other's families, etc. Whereas now I think in India, at least, or in the arranged marriage space, people don't care so much if you're from one part of the India. People don't care so much if you're from one extreme part of India and the other partners from another, which used to be a concern before. Now it's more financial parity.
I think it makes sense in a way, right? So I think what broader checks that people do in terms of, you know, arranged marriages, I suppose these checks are in place a little bit more than, when you're selecting your own partner, and how or where are we of our situation. So I also met my husband when I was 18, actually. It's funny, we are both, we both committed at such a young age.
Early boomers.
Like you said, I mean, it's interesting, you learn different mindsets between ourselves and our partners. One is more financially savvy versus the other, in terms of, you know, even mindset of spending. How do you kind of go about spending? Do you kind of take a step back, you know, make sure you're getting value and then buy? Or do you just say, cool, I like this, I'm getting this. My husband's the latter, I'm the former. We were like that a little bit more previously. We've now met each other halfway somewhere along the way. So,
You're absolutely right. I think this generation, people who are in their mid-20s, I would probably say right now, are so much more savvy about figuring out or being aware of their patterns versus their partner's patterns, which I definitely wasn't. Luckily, mine and my husband's spending patterns are quite similar. Or something that I really gained from is a lot of unconditional support in terms of him never questioning my spending patterns, or being really supportive and considering it as a very one homogeneous pool, which wasn't my previous experience from how my parents operate with money, and it's been a very welcome change. So one thing I would like to say is, even though that might be an important concern for you to know compatibility with another person, but that shouldn't be something that holds you back. I think there's some beauty in growing together, like you just said, right?
Yeah, we all have our strengths. We all have our weaknesses. I've learned a lot from my husband when it comes to letting go, when it comes to, you know, just spending with ease. I mean, we're working hard. You spend with ease. You spend on things you like without getting so caught up with, like, analysis paralysis. We've spoken about this in the past. So he's taught me a lot about spending with ease. And I think that's really added to the quality of my life, where I don't get stuck with, you know, this decision, stress behind making a decision or trying to justify. And it's quite liberating and freeing, actually.
Yeah, same here. So I think what I've learned is feeling really secure about there always being enough money. We're all pretty privileged. If we're listening to this podcast on a smartphone, then we all make the cut. And so my husband brings a lot of security and also a little bit of detachment from numbers, because all my studying, academic life, professional life has been about numbers. I find it very hard to take a macro view. So I go deep in, and the numbers are very etched into my mind. I find it easy to memorize phone numbers as well, for example, or like accounting figures, etc., are normally easy for me to remember, which means that if I know certain numbers, it's very hard for me to step away or bring any sort of ease, air, flow with things changing. So I think I kind of take that comfort, reassurance, because things are always changing. And there have been times where I've been very focused on, let's say, I think I've mentioned this before, but on a pot of money that was assigned towards, let's say, when I first got into entrepreneurship. And there was so much focus on money going out of that pot that there was barely any focus on the inflow as well, the possible inflow, which meant I was so detached from the possibility of the income that I did attract a lot of outflow, whether it was planned or unplanned, which is not something that I think my partner would have done or was healthy to do in hindsight. But this is what I wanted to kind of say when I said that there's beauty in growing together, but that definitely comes from personal growth, right? So everything's changing, everyone's changing, and as long as you're open and honest, I think that's kind of where the baseline is.
Yeah, agreed. I think a lot of these thoughts and ways and habits and, you know, call it what you may, come from our own families, our own upbringing, you know, examples of wanting to go out for a cup of coffee and the mom being like, oh, I can make you a better cup at home and at a fraction of the price, or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, these little things somehow bring us to where we are today in terms of our mindset. And it's really about understanding our mindset, understanding that understanding our mindset, and then to be able to consciously decide to be a certain way, because that mindset may not even be yours. That belief may not even be yours.
Yeah, and I think the age that we live in, with the over information and almost over analysis of every minute thing, doesn't help. So when I got married back in 2011, I wasn't working for the first few months, and it was really natural for my husband to just have a joint account and not ask any questions, because the implicit belief is that I will be as responsible with his money as I would be with mine, and the name on the account doesn't make a difference in terms of how responsible, how attached I feel to the money, attached or detached, obviously. And I think that sentiment has really come forth in terms of me feeling like a unit with him, me feeling like a team member. And if instead, at that time, I would have researched into what the best way of doing finances for a couple would have been, I would have been totally confused. I may have found his good intentions to be not as progressive, or I don't know what I would have thought instead, but I could have easily had a problem with his good intentions. And I'm glad I didn't do that, because everyone has a different way of looking at things and also deriving comfort. So I know so many people who swear by having separate accounts and then pooling some percentage of funds for doing their fixed expense payments. Whereas I know other couples who've done what we've done and they don't have any problems with it. And so many other variations, right?
Yeah, it's all about what brings you comfort, what makes you feel safe. I mean, you get people that are so used to thinking they're independent or feeling more independent if you have your own pot of money that you can dip into. And I mean, there are life situations that happen and there are stories you hear about why it's always important to have your own money and have control over it. But it doesn't have to apply to everyone. And I think this kind of nicely leads us into one of the other things we discussed earlier about society-based roles in support and contribution and in terms of the masculine versus feminine. And when I say that, I mean the masculine energy versus the feminine energy, where the feminine is more nurturing, more providing, the caretaker. The masculine brings in the money, works, the whole structured side of things in life, finances. More masculine energy. And what we are used to, or what I've seen in the past, is where the husband would be the breadwinner, but the wife would then run the household and take care of the money situation. Whereas today it's such a mix of both, where you see couples where the wife's earning, the husband's kind of taking care of the house, the husband's earning, the wife's taking care of the house. And the definition of contribution is in my mind, it's not money. It's actually a lot more than that, right? It's the support that someone provides at home is equally as important than as the person who is actually bringing the money in.
This is such a relevant discussion that's quite close to my heart. So I decided to step out of my job in 2017 after having my son, with a vision to being an entrepreneur. But I remember there's a hypnotherapist that I go to regularly. She's really helped me with a lot of issues. And I remember discussing this with her just before I gave birth. And she said, from the way I know your energies, I don't think you should leave your job, because you really attach your self-worth with your self-identity with your work. And I was like, I don't know what she's talking about. I don't think I feel this way. She doesn't know me better than I know myself. And I had a very toxic kind of work environment, which I couldn't see myself getting into after becoming a mother. So I made that decision. And a couple of months in, knowing that this was temporary and knowing that I would not be, I will be doing something more constructive, quote unquote, I had a lot of identity problems, and she was spot on. You don't even realize how much value you put towards the monetary contribution that you bring in. Because I feel like we're a bit of a blended generation, or maybe our mothers were blended, the blended generation, and then we are kind of on the other side. In terms of our grandmothers, just talking about female and feminine roles right now,
yeah.
Our grandmothers, I think, were pretty clear with their role in society. They were supposed to look after the house, look after the kids, and they would derive their life's purpose from that very clearly. I don't see any of them having any guilt, shame around working, not working, etc., right? And then our mothers were probably born in that generation where females had only just started going out into the workforce, and some of them, based on their family backgrounds, brought some of that pressure on themselves and became breadwinners or started supporting the family financially as well. But what you see in that generation is, while they started giving that financial support, a lot of the household duties were not taken away. They still had those pressures. They still had those expectations. And that just meant that a lot of them are probably either mentally, emotionally frustrated now that they are senior citizens above 60, or a lot of them have joint problems, diseases that harbor these frustrations.
Yeah, it's about not being able to, I think they did the best they could, but it's also about not being able to express how, you know, thinly you're stretched in terms of feeling the need to bring in money while at the same time running the house, the food, the cleaning, the children, schools.
It's really draining.
I cannot even imagine how that was done. We grew up in a joint family, three families, seven kids. And each of the moms were actually working. And so I think back now and I'm like, I really understand why my mom and the aunts actually behave, think and feel the way they do and why they may have health issues that they do. Because like you said, it was just all piled on, right? So today I think we're so well informed. You said we've got access to so much information. We've got access to podcasts like these, right? I mean, we've learned a lot from just general online media. And to be able to identify what situation we are going through, to be able to clearly communicate with our partner in terms of where we're at in terms of money, whether it's support in the family, whether it's bringing in money in the house, or, you know, the mix of it. I think awareness is definitely the first step. And then you're able to take steps in the right direction more consciously.
And just to kind of finish this loop, I think we as a generation are probably an offshoot of our mother's generation in terms of taking the pressure from both sides. I think the way I see it, we are aware of our choices and we have plenty of these choices, which is something that I'm really grateful for. But then that also adds a level of confusion that all of us have to kind of go through. So what really helps, I think, in all of this is to understand a basic principle that Rupali highlighted already, that is the breadwinner. There's a lot of pride associated to being self-made in the society, especially if your parents were immigrants or if they were the first generation of people in their family to be educated, to be successful, then you've kind of lived through that self-made pride, right? But who in the end is self-made? And this is a question that really brought it home for me. Is a person who has earn the money to build the first house owned by a family, is he self-made? Would he be self-made without the support of their wife or even their children who gave up that time with them? So for me, I think that really flipped the switch, and I'm very grateful for all the emotional support that I get, all the you know, unconditional support that I get. Let's say even to record this podcast, it's a time commitment that takes away from something else that I could have been doing. So I have very slowly flipped that switch in terms of not measuring how well I'm doing in life with the amount that I bring in to the account. It is a very deep belief that I've had to work on.
It is. It's quite, it's so kind of, it's brushed under the carpet a lot of the times, but it's so empowering to kind of understand where you're at in your in terms of your life situation and what you can and can't do about it. And more often than not, you know, it's really freeing to kind of think of it that way. Within a couple, I think it's important to be okay that we all have different strengths. We all have different things we bring to the table. Whether one person's being the support while the other one's trying to getting, you know, achieving a lot, whether it's financially or otherwise, whether it comes to some one person making the financial decisions and the other one bringing in the money, you know, there's so many combinations and permutations of this kind of situation. It changes over life, it changes over time, circumstances change, and so who drives the finances and the investment portfolio really depends on us. You know, it's on a case-by-case basis where if it comes naturally to one person, go for it. Why do you both have to have an equal say? I mean, yeah, equality is great. You know, this whole, we've been brought up with this whole equality bullshit. And I call it that because it's actually not true. Because when we're saying equality, we're talking about equality in the workplace. But what about equality in life generally? And what about us each of us playing to our strengths? And that's what the definition of equality could mean.
Yeah, I think this might be a controversial opinion, but for me, equality comes down to having the same amount of openness, I suppose, to either person's actions, whether they're a female or a male. So a male may decide to step out of work and have a go at their passions. Or I know so many males, for example, personally, who are quite passionate about running the house. It's their dream to be a house husband, yeah. And they derive satisfaction from that. So if we are able to stay open to any person, irrespective of their gender, making a decision that's right for them, for me, it boils down to that in terms of equality. All the equality bullshit that you mentioned that comes up in our pop culture is so, sometimes it can be so negative in terms of making our generation feel very calculative. Like,
yeah.
You almost feel like you don't want to do a certain thing because that's what's expected of you. So the rebel in me would not want to take charge of the food because why do I have to? I mean, why just me?
Yeah.
Whereas if you think about it as a team effort, then there are so many things that I'm able to let go of. I don't know when the car is due for service. I don't want to know when it's due for service. And my husband's happy to take that role. And there may be so many other things that I depend on him for. And I think that's how the team works in terms of kind of moving things forward instead of us either forcing each other to do everything together,
yeah.
Or really being calculative about, I did this, so now you have to do something else. I ordered food today, you have to cook it tomorrow. I cooked today, you have to do the dishes today. I don't think that works for me.
Yeah, I think as long as there's an understanding between the couple, you know, don't get us wrong, we are kind of, you know, Kalyan and I are very much about empowered women, about all of that. So we are not saying that women should just sit in the house because that's their contribution.
Oh, no.
What we are saying is understand for yourself what that means, where you'd like to live your life. Maybe you would like to just be a housewife and, or not be called a housewife, a homemaker, whatever you'd like to call yourself, just your name, you know, whatever it is. But it could mean doing 50-50 of each thing. It could mean one day doing 75-25. It could mean 100-0. It could mean whatever it means. And you don't have to compare yourself to anyone. And as long as you two have that understanding, I mean, I know on days when I'm running late, to have my husband helping me to get my stuff together so that I don't have to stress on my way out. I mean, yeah, I really, that's the support that, you know, that's amazing to have.
Yeah.
And you can't calculate on these kind of little things at all.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and I think there's an advantage of having different energies with money as well. So in my relationship, generally, I am the wind of change who's kind of looking at the next thing and preparing for it, etc. Whereas my husband brings more grounded root chakra energy. And if we didn't have either one of these, then either we would be really complacent, stagnant in that root energy, only that root energy, or we would constantly be changing things and not being happy with anything if it was just the air energy, the change of energy. So I think it's good to have that balance. And we are all for empowered women, like Rupali said. But I would also like to invite everyone to consider detaching their value, their self-identity from the salary that you earn. I think it's always really beneficial to see yourself separate from your work, your role, your salary. And a good test of this is if someone gives you 10 seconds to introduce yourself, how do you introduce yourself? So most people you'll find will say, hi, I'm so-and-so. I do this for work.
Hmm.
But it's such a challenge for them to, including myself, to introduce myself without mentioning what I do for work, right?
Yeah, I think it is. I think when I did this kind of exercise earlier on, I mean, you're not your name, you're not what you do. And so who are you then? And that left me a little confused in terms of, really?
Yeah.
But I think it's a really, really good way to really understand yourself. We've been brought up a certain way, which makes us think that our values link to financial, you know, rewards or income or whatever it is. But we don't have to think like that today. This is why we've created this podcast, because there are many, many different ways to free your mind, to free yourself in terms of your financial situation, and really just live the life that feels with ease and flow.
Yeah, because, you know, it doesn't even stop with measuring yourself against financial benchmarks. People who have made peace with them not bringing an income might find a different way to measure their value. For example, My mom was the queen of productivity. She still is. So it was always about bringing one thing into the room and taking two away. This was her mantra, and that meant that she was constantly hustling. I don't ever remember her being able to put her feet up and watch a TV show without any mental pressure to do the next thing. And this is what I mean. Like, it's not just about finances in the end. Like, where does it stop? That mentality doesn't stop. So it is a really useful thing to zone in and get to know yourself, leaving your work, your habits, your traits aside. And it might leave you confused and empty for some time, but it will only add to your life later.
Yeah, to kind of wrap this conversation up, I want to kind of remind our listeners again, the intention behind these discussions, this entire podcast actually, is like a group coaching model. And so when we ask these questions, when we say, reflect on this, think about this, it's only about getting to know yourself better, to take steps in the right direction after you get to know yourself better. It's a journey. Kalyani and I are still learning about ourselves on a day-to-day basis, and so we really encourage you to take this opportunity and, you know, spend that 20 minutes that it would take to get to know yourself a bit more. So with that, we bring this episode of our financial adventure to an end. Please follow us on all social media platforms at Fantastic Females.
None of the information provided is financial advice, and Fantastic Females is not a financial advisor.
The information provided is educational only. It is general in nature and does not take into account your personal circumstances.
Please use your own due diligence before making any financial or investment decisions.